I need you to knock some sense into me. I'm sure you can.
Yeah, I don't know.
I enjoy listening to you. I don't always agree with everything.
All right. Enough of this persiflage.
So, you want my question?
I'm certainly not going to get myself in trouble by telling you what to do.
That makes great sense. Gosh, that's good.
Did I overwhelm you with words and wisdom?
I've got 7 kids. I feel like I could call you every day.
Wait, you're telling me I'm wrong?
Yes, I am, Dr. Ray.
You just need to tune in to Dr. Ray, honey. She's got all the answers.
Am I right or am I right?
Probably.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
I've decided it's about time to consider retirement. I can live off my savings. However, I am not sure how I'll live the week after that. Maybe I better stick around. Real nice to have you here. Dr. Ray Guarendi, the program The Doctor Is In, the variant of the program, E-Person Monday. Because the server, and I don't know exactly what that is, they've been telling me that's like the post office that holds your mail, and then your computer is your mailbox. Well, my server post office, for whatever the reason, had malfunctioned, and me being rather unsophisticated, I have two emails, and one of them is the contact page on the website. That's where I get the e-persons coming in from. Well, I noticed, I thought to myself, wow, I'm just not getting the numbers of e-persons I used to get. Well, I just chalked it up. I said, okay. So they either don't want to write in or I've answered every question. Well, somehow we stumbled across, and I think it was because I got real suspicious. I said, okay, I can see the e-persons going down. I can't see them going to zero. And sure enough, there were 600 of them sitting on the server. Now, a lot of them were just spam, right? But an awful lot of them were e-persons, and they're sitting there now. And I wrote to the people and said, I'm sorry, these mails did not come through, but I'm going to try to catch up to them as best I can. So today I'm going back a couple months now to get some of these for today, and hopefully we will get to that. I heard James Dobson, a Christian evangelist psychologist, once say, we act according not to what people think of us, but to what we think they think of us. I'll give you an example. Let's say somebody comes up to you and says, you know, one of the things I just really appreciate about you, you're so mannerly. You always say please, you always say thank you, you're just a very mannerly person. And you're thinking to yourself, I'm not that mannerly, I don't know where they're getting that. I mean, yeah, I try to be polite, but I'm not the most mannerly person around. Here's the question. Around that person, would you now be more mannerly than you were? I say you are. You would be. Why? Because you think they think that. You didn't know they thought that. So you didn't act according to what they thought, because they never told you what they thought. But once they told you, then you said, oh, now I'm going to act according to what I think they think. That is a powerful way to nudge people to act better toward you. For example, let's say in a marriage, if you would like more apologies from your spouse, you get some. But there's times when you think, you know, apology would have been warranted, but it didn't happen. What if you said something like, well, I'll tell you, one of the things I appreciate you is that you apologize. Would you get more or less apologies in the future? I think you get more. Because you have told this person, this is what I think, and the person thinks Oh, she thinks I apologize when it's due. Even though you don't, you just apologize when you think it's due. So you're acting according to what you think she thinks. Very, very potent motivator. Say you're raising a kid, and your little nine-year-old is, he's pretty solicitous of his seven-year-old sister, but he could be a little easier going with her. And you tell him, you know what I really like about you? You're always so good to your sister. You're always trying to be the big brother. You're always trying to be the one who treats her good, and because you protect her a lot. Now, he has just found out what he thinks you think. He wasn't thinking to himself, well, I'm going to try to treat my sister better because mom thinks I treat her good. No, he now thinks that you think he treats her good. So would he be more or less likely to live up to that? When I first heard that, it was a bit of a revelation for me. Because I thought, don't we act according to what people think of us? Yeah, but there's an intermediate step. And that intermediate step is my perception of what you think of me. And that can be used in your favor. If you have a certain behavior or quality or habit that you'd like to see more of from another person, rather than telling them you'd like to see more of it, you could say, you know what I appreciate about you? And then you mention that habit, even though in your mind you'd like to see more of it, you're acknowledging that they do some of it. And you're not saying you do some of it. You're implying that this is a quality or a habit or a behavior that I appreciate in you, and they're going to think, oh, well, she thinks this of me. And most people, I think, would be a little more likely to live up to what they think you think. If you say to your spouse, you know, you're so affectionate. I like your affection. And you're thinking to yourself, I could use a little bit more, but I'm grateful for what I got. Do you think they might ratchet up the affection because they think you think that? I think so. A lot of thinks going on around here. You're not being manipulative. You're not saying, I'm going to trick them into acting right. No, you're acknowledging that there is a certain habit, quality, characteristic that they have. But if they are confident that you're aware of that, and you think that about them, they could be more likely to live up to it. Dr. Ray.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Hi, I'm Angie. Did you know a billboard can save a baby's life? It's true. You can make a difference this holiday by helping us spread the pro-life message to reach those who are struggling with an unplanned pregnancy. Our billboards and ads feature our 800 hotline for help, which connects people to pro-life centers nationwide that can assist with free medical help, baby supplies, and more. Won't you join us in this season of giving? Please make a gift today. Visit ProLifeAcrossAmerica.org. That's ProLifeAcrossAmerica.org.
Hello, Steve Ray here from Footprints of God Pilgrimages. The land of our Lord and our Lady is calling us. We're heading back to the Holy Land over Christmas break this year. We have the best, most reliable guides and services awaiting us. The holy sites are open, and the local Christians are anxious to see us. Galilee, Jerusalem, Nazareth, Bethlehem. No crowds, no lines. Hope you can join us.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at avemariaradio.net.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at avemaria.com. That's avemaria.com.
Wives, put this radio under your husband's pillow recliner when I'm on. And you can get radio archives at avemariaradio.net, and I guarantee the number of yes dears will rise. Last study we did was 74%. That's a pretty hefty rise. E-Person Monday. I'm a young female who met this wonderful Catholic man, and we are beginning marriage prep. We plan to officially become engaged fall of 2025. That's now. As we start marriage prep and answer some of the questions, I learned that my boyfriend, fiance, was very, and she capitalized very, frisky. The word she uses, the euphemism that she captures, during his past relationship. They officially broke off in January of this year, and we started talking in February and dating in May. My heart is broken, and that's in caps with an exclamation point. Everyone around me says, it's not a huge deal. He's committed to you now, and everyone has a past. Well, I want to comment on that in a second. But I still grieve. I somehow feel that I have lost something. Well, in one sense you have. He is no longer going to be with you and you alone. I mean, from this point forward he might, but that is gone. And I feel less sure about marriage with this man because these emotions are so intense. Well, I think they're intense because you had very high hopes and expectations. I have been very, and she puts very in caps, intentional about not crossing the line in my past relationships, and I sometimes wonder if I can move forward with this man. I love him dearly. But if these thoughts and feelings continue, I don't know if I can continue this relationship. I really, caps, want to make it work. Is there a possibility I can get over this? Well, yes and no. Don't you just love psychologists? We can be so definitive sometimes, maybe. A couple of things struck me. All right. He broke off his relationship in January, and they started dating in May, 5 months later. Now they're engaged. So what? Roughly 4 months later? Engaged. So a four-month stretch of courtship, getting to know each other, and now they're engaged. Relatively very short period of time. So the question becomes, do I feel confident in knowing this person? It's a question only you can answer. People saying it's not a huge deal, he's committed to you now. Well, in your mind, it sounds like you're saying, wait a minute, I'm not sure he views this whole marriage, commitment, virgin thing as I do. Which is fair. Maybe you could explore this further with him. Ask him about why he had this kind of relationship with this person. What it meant to him. Was there any kind of moral component at play? Or no? No, I like you, we're a couple, so therefore we do what couples do. I think a lot of it's going to come down to, if you say, can I get past this? Well, a lot of it's going to come down to your own comfort in where he is mentally, morally about all this. How does he describe it? How does he characterize that past relationship for you? What did it mean to him? And do you know him enough after 4 months to say, I feel very, very confident that who he is with me is going to be the way he's going to be till death do us part? I mean, that's your decision. You have to decide that, and maybe you'll say, well, I could decide it if I know him for a longer period of time. I'd have more info. Be interesting to see what the person who is guiding your marriage prep would say about this. And, for example, if he was physical in this previous relationship, were there any others? Was this a pattern? Or was it something where he dated this person for 3 years and he thought he was going to marry her, and therefore, this is not excusing it, but it makes it a little more understandable than if it were just a two-month relationship and it was something that was part and parcel of most relationships that he had. Those are all questions I think you can explore with him. All right, let me see where I'm going now. I heard you talk about the hardest part of parenting on your radio show relatively recently. I don't remember what that was. I think it was the hardest part was listening to little kid jokes. I don't know, maybe. I can't remember what you said the hardest part. But for me, the hardest part is definitely trying to figure out what to do when I don't know which child to believe about a situation. So I don't know who to discipline or if discipline is even needed. Side note, my explanatory story involves two boys, but I have 8 children, 11 years down to 3 months in all. I deal with this rather heavily in my parenting books, which is in this type of sibling quibbling interchange, he did what I said, he said, you said, they said. You can't know unless you get a security camera. We did. We put in our home a 24/7 eye in the sky monitoring system. An 8-year-old daughter, who of course was totally aware of what any of her brothers did at any time, and completely willing to tell us in written form, in triplicate, with a nice cover that she colored. That said, a couple of things. One, there's a continuum here. You can sometimes determine who was the main perp, who started it, who kept it going, who tried to pull out of it, etc. You can. You heard it. That's one. Sometimes you know who it would be because that's the person who does it. They're the one. The other one isn't really prone for these kind of conflicts. 3, sometimes you're totally at a loss. You have no idea. That said, you have to guess. You have to say, well, since I don't know, both are going to get the same thing. You can do that. And of course, the one child will say, that's not fair. And then we, reading parenting manual number 109.C, subsection B, paragraph A, we say, life's not fair. I always tell parents, nah, that's cliche. Say, you're right. Life's fair. I'm not. Okay, just teasing. But sometimes you do have to act on your best judgment. You can tell the kids, hey, if I'm wrong, I'll admit it, but I can't know. And if you guys are going to bicker over this and both give me conflicting stories and stereophonic discord, then I got to act. Now, fortunately, much of the time, you can know. You truly can. You can piece it together, you know? Pull them into an interrogation room with the bright light. You have 8 kids. Now, I'm not going to put the 3-month-old in the mix, but you think about it. The potential number of conflicts, differing conflicts between differing children would be a factorial of 8. 8 times 7 times 6 times 5 times 4 times 3 times 2. That's how many potential differing kids could get into conflicts. Now, 8 times 7 is 56. Times 6, let's say, is 336. Times 5, that's 1,500, 1,600, 50. Times 4, that's 6,000, 6,400 and some, 6,500. Times 3, 18,000, 19,500. Times 2, close to 20, 40,000 different combinations, permutations of sibling interchanges that result in conflict. So she gives an example. For instance, my 8-year-old son Charles was hosing off muddy boots in our backyard, and his 5-year-old brother Peter came into the house all wet. Before I saw Peter, Charles found me and said that Peter had run through the hose while he was cleaning the boots off and got all wet. Then Peter stomps up crying and saying he was swinging on the tire swing and Charles deliberately sprayed him with the hose. What do you do when you didn't see what happened and you have no way of knowing the truth? Signed, a confused and mentally exhausted mom. I think part of it for you, mom, is you're too concerned about being exactly right. As a parent, you're going to have to live in a certain foggy unawareness sometimes. So you make a judgment. How likely was it that, in fact, your son was just swinging on the tire swing and his other son, his older brother, was capable of spraying him off? You can do that. Say, you know what I think? I think you did that. Now, let's say that he didn't do it and he's really, really incensed that you would blame him and he just feels put upon and misaccused. Okay, it's not the end of the world. And you could tell him, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong and I'm sorry. But this is the judgment I'm going to make. You could say, well, I didn't see what happened, so neither one of you guys, I'm not doing anything about it, but you're both inside for the rest of the day. You could tell him, I'm going to handle this the same for both of you, so think twice next time before you come in here with accusations and one of you is not telling the truth. You do that. But I think what's bothering you, Mom, is that you're afraid of being wrong. You're going to be wrong. There's times you just going to have to act and you don't know all the facts. That's the way it is. Especially when you got 8 of them. When that little 3-month-old gets a little older, just gets a little more complicated. Thank you for joining me here. The doctor is in. This is E-Person Monday, trying to catch up. Some of these E-Persons go way back because they were stuck in digital Neverland on my server. And I'm just getting now to them. Some of them are 2 or 3 months old. Hi, Dr. Ray. I just listened to your podcast today where you talked about the lady who got up and walked away from her husband during a dinner dispute. Yeah, I think I remember that. There was something going on, and she basically just was frustrated, got up, and started walking home. As she walked, she realized there may be someone following her in a car. and she was in fear. So she called her husband. There was no answer, which we don't know why that is, but maybe he saw the number, saw the call, and just didn't. But then she called her son, and he came to the rescue. My issue, Dr. Ray, is this. I know for a fact that both the wife and her son refused to let the hubby know what direction this vehicle was going because they didn't want to cause trouble. Or perhaps a more serious outcome would have happened. Okay, I don't know how she knows for that for a fact. Okay, maybe she's just assuming that, again, I'm going to read this again, that the wife and her son refused to let the hubby know what direction this vehicle was going. Well, if she said it was following her, that would mean that it was going in the same direction she was. So my understanding of your advice to her is this. And then she said, and this is what I heard. Maybe I misheard you. Simply approach the husband and say you're sorry for the dinner dispute. I don't remember what I said. I may have said, apologize for your part of the dispute. Maybe. It's always good to apologize for your part of any dispute. Even if you only think it's 12%, apologize for your 12%. I realize, back to the E person here, I realize she made a mistake in walking home. But, and that's a big but right there, what about his actions in demanding to know which direction the car was going? Okay, then now I just realized I'm reading further along in the E person here that apparently she must have told me that when she told her husband that she was scared, his question was which direction was the car going, and she didn't think that was a very good question regarding her apprehension. Then the letter writer goes on, I think she should tell her husband the truth and say, I refuse to tell you because I was afraid of what you might say or do. I'm a little confused there. About what? Which direction, if she tells him the car was following me, why would she be afraid of what he might say about that? I think in every relationship there should be a level of transparency. Okay, now, she's going to go on here, another paragraph, and this illustrates what is very common when I get an email when someone has very strong opinions about the situation that was described in the call. High percentage of the time, it was very personal. Here's what I mean. She goes on. P.S. On a personal note, my hubby walked out on me while we were at a restaurant many years ago. We had a difference of opinion, and he acted like a 7-year-old and left. Mind you, Dr. A, we have been together for nearly 30 years. It was over something really stupid. I allowed him to walk about 3 miles, then I picked him up. Laugh out loud. I guess she's saying she was in the position of the husband. And when the wife got up and walked out and started walking wherever, I guess toward home, that was an immature thing to do, and that he was understandably frustrated by it and didn't really want to immediately react to it. And she says, I did the same thing. I allowed him to walk 3 miles. Then I picked him up. that's a frequent template in letters I'll get where someone says, I want to correct you, Dr. Ray. Or, have you thought about this, Dr. Ray? Or, what about this angle, Dr. Ray? Or, you missed this, Dr. Ray? And I'd say minimally 50% of the time, there is the last paragraph that says, because I had a similar situation. And here's how I handled it, or here's how it unfolded for me. And I think that's the case here. All right. Where are we at? Take care of that one. Let's see that one. Okay. Take care of that one. Go to this one. Okay. I was just getting ready to start this e-person, but I realize I've got 1 minute here before the break. So I will just do what they do in radio, and I will fill up the minute with embolalia. My website's drray.com, DRRAY.com. It is going to be revamped. My son, who handles all my social media, including Instagram, Facebook, YouTube page, is going to take care of that. He's pretty sophisticated in these things. And the bookstore page, which has 18 of my titles up to this point, is there. And that's how we generally help people out when they call in with questions or e-person questions, because the books obviously have so much more in them than you can do in a radio call or an email. But the books are signed, and they are also discounted. And the shipping and handling is, we lose money on it, but we try to keep it low so people don't spend a whole lot. There, I talked all the way to the break. I have joined so many of these anonymous groups that people now know who I am. I'm no longer anonymous. I joined one, Procrastinators Anonymous. I joined that 2 years ago. We haven't met yet, but I'm still waiting. Dr. Ray, I've worked as a home health nurse for many years. I listen to your program whenever I can. Well, you're going to have psychological gaps, but I'm not going to address that in this particular e-person. I want to comment on callers who have parents and family members with dementia and other ailments. Many of the patients I have worked with would be in much better shape if their children and other family members would just spend some time with them and give the primary caregiver a break. On the TV show a few years back, we had a couple of sisters who were involved in running the House of Loretto here in Canton. Was a religiously run home for elderly and those with various stages of dementia and physical incapacities. One of the things they pointed out to me was that most often it is the eldest daughter who takes on the bulk of caregiving, whether that is consistently looking in on mom or dad, or having mom or dad to the house. It is not unusual for one adult child, I hate using that word adult child, one adult person of the younger generation to take care of the elderly parent however they can. They do the bulk of it. They do 94% of it, if you will. And they will tell me frequently, just even some support from other family members would be just so appreciated if they got any. And sadly, they're disappointed by family members who live in the same town. We're not talking somebody 7 states away, who are minimally, if at all, involved in any caretaking. The attitude seems to be, well, you're doing it, that's good. Somebody's taking care of mom or dad. She goes on. I'm often sadly a witness to the lack of family support when it comes to dealing with elderly parents. Yeah, you see it firsthand because you're a registered home care nurse. I see it because I talk to many parents doing this. Children are one's flesh and blood. I was brought up to believe that children do owe their parents something, especially if their parents are good parents. Yeah, I wrestle with how often I see where they say, well, my mom was always difficult and it's hard for me to be around her, as opposed to, that's my mom and we had a good relationship, a solid relationship, but now she's not who she used to be and therefore it's too tough for me to be around her. Or it's inconvenient. She says, I have heard every excuse why children are not giving their parents the time of day. I think society today is just too self-oriented. Oh, I'm going to agree with you for that. I've reiterated that on this program over and over and over again. That kind of me focus is really pervasive. When people call in, Dr. Ray, about their concerns with elderly or sick family members, it would be interesting to know what the callers are doing to help the situation. Yeah. Sometimes I ask. Sometimes I go with where the caller leads me regarding their own particular frustration. One of the better observations I have heard over the years, and I've heard it a number of times, people will ask, say, for example, a spouse who is still cognitively functioning very well, visiting a spouse who has had long-standing dementia and is now to the point where they simply don't recognize their spouse anymore. But they will go in consistently, often on a daily basis. Not unusually, somebody will say, why do you go in so much? He doesn't know who you are. And one of the best answers I've ever heard was, he may not know who I am, but I still know who he is. More of your questions after the break.
Well, thank you for being there for us and our questions.
Every woman deserves specialized health care. At Arbor Women Health, our team of compassionate professionals listen to our patients and want to understand what they're going through. They serve everyone from teen girls to seniors. Our faith-based clinicians specialize in obstetrics, gynecology, fertility awareness and crisis, or unexpected pregnancies. Call 734-930-4020 or visit arborwomenhealth.org. Arbor Woman, faith-inspired, dignity-affirming healthcare.
The Heart of the Interior Life with Elizabeth Jangle.
In St. Ignatius of Loyola's teaching on the discernment of spirits, St. Ignatius uses the phrase, the good spirit, to indicate God and the instruments of God's grace that move within the human heart to communicate his direction. Father Timothy Gallagher writes, the good spirit certainly indicates, above all, God and his direct action in the human heart. For Ignatius, good spirit also signifies the angels, who by God's design serve as instruments of his love for his children. The term the good spirit also indicates the many marvelous ways God communicates within our hearts through the life of grace, the gifts of the Holy Spirit, the influences for good in the world, and through the communion of saints. We too may also be called upon to be an instrument of grace in someone else's life. How will you open your heart and your day so that you may be an instrument of the good spirit?
For more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Speaking 200 to 400 words a minute with gusts up to 800. Very nice to have you with me here on the Doctor's Inn this E-Person Monday. Dr. Ray, I'm writing about the woman's brother who hadn't been to confession in 25 years, saying he is, quote, not ready. He may not be going because he's not ready to give up on a sin he knows is grave, like pornography or sins against purity. He has to decide to have a firm purpose of amendment. That may be why he doesn't elaborate on his avoidance of confession with his sister. You know, that's a good point. I didn't even think about that at the time of the call. That's very possible that his attitude is, I'm not either sure I can give it up or if I want to give it up. If that's the case, what would you advise for either of them? I knew you were going to put me in a tough position like that. I would say to him, if you wish to give up whatever it is that's keeping you from confession, then you go to confession for the grace and the strength to give it up. If you want to give it up, but you think you're too weak to give it up, welcome to the club, because we all want to give up our sins, but we end up being too weak in many cases to do so consistently, and we have to go back to confession. If you don't want to give it up, if you say to yourself, I want to get to a point in my life where I am ready to give it up, then at that point, I would probably just say, well, I hope you do get to that point, and I'll pray that you do, so that you go to confession, you get the grace of confession, and confession will give you some of the strength you need to want to give it up. I'd approach it. Let's see what we got. I got time for one more. Yeah, that's going to be a little bit long. Let me go to something a little shorter. Our oldest child, 1 month ago, our only daughter, 20 years old, died in a single car accident. Oh, my. At the time of her death, she was estranged from our family. She was addicted to methamphetamine and cocaine and had severe mental health conditions, possibly bipolar, but she wouldn't get treatment, even signing herself out of a mental health hospital against medical advice. We tried so hard to help her, but it didn't ever get through. My husband and I also have two younger sons, 18 and 15, and we're also devastated. I hate that she died and she was so mad at me and we never got to work things out or see her in a healthy state mentally as an adult. How do we heal from this? Help our boys cope. Time will help take away some of the devastation. But if you add guilt to it, if you say, we could have done more, what did we miss, why did this happen, where was the shortfall in my parenting, if you do that to yourself, you will torture yourself. What is clear, at least from what you're describing, is that she chose to distance herself. And she chose it because her mind wasn't working right. And I think that's what you tell the boys. You say, God is merciful, to her, because he takes into account all the things that could keep someone from being blameworthy. If her brain wasn't working right, and she had serious mental health problems, that played a part in her separating from us, and it played a part in her drug addiction, because her brain, the thing you count upon to help you make good judgments, moral judgments, wasn't working. So God takes all that into account. You emphasize the fact that she wasn't full capability. And it's a good thing God is able to sort through that better than we are. But the other thing I would say is that grief lasts much, much longer when it is fueled by guilt. When somehow, some way, this tragic situation could have been partly my fault. Or, if not my fault, could have nudged me to do more than I did. If your daughter wouldn't allow that, then the situation was completely out of your hands. It was out of her brother's hands too. I think also I would focus on helping the brothers to be grateful that they have a brain that works right. And if they say, why would God do that? You can say, God didn't do that. Things happen. It's all very, very different in the way our lives unfold. But the one thing we do know is God's infinitely capable of sorting it all out. We can't. We only know a sliver of what the facts are. God knows every single thing. He knows every neuron in her brain. He knows which ones are working and which ones aren't. And as a result, this poor little girl, and I'll bet, Mom, you didn't say this in the letter, but I'll bet her estrangement from the family had been building, that in fact she was headed in that direction even as a teenager, even as a later teen. There were conflicts there, and you tried to reach her, and you did what you could. You did what was humanly possible. We could have done more, Dr. Ray. Everybody says that. Whenever a tragic situation occurs in their family, they go, what more could I have done? Yeah, and that is a torturous question. Because you did not set out to neglect your daughter. You did not set out to ignore her turmoil. You tried to get her help. She refused it. She didn't want it. And that was part and parcel of the brain that wasn't working right. And that's so often the case. Part of the picture is that I don't think I need help. I know many, many situations like this. So, Mom, those are just some of the brief thoughts I would have for you and your sons. As a parent, let go of the second guessing and the guilt driving mindset. And for your sons, help them to understand God's mercy and His willingness to see your daughter as a hurting, wounded person, but still a child of God. Wish they would have called in, so I could at least add a few more thoughts to that. This is Dr. Ray. Thank you for joining me here on this Doctor Is In on this E-Person Monday. I appreciate your company. Walk with God. That's your only walk of real meaning.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit drray.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.